It is time for this week's Friday panel, and we have with us on the panel this week two of our regional TDs, Donegal Independent Deputy Thomas Pringle and Sligo Leitrim Fianna Fáil Deputy Mark McSharry. Good morning to both, and thank you for joining us this Friday morning. Before we start, I know, Deputy McSharry, you wanted to say a few words about the late Sligo councillor Patsy Barry, who passed on during the week.
Thanks for the opportunity, Niall. We lost Patsy during the week. He had served as a councillor for many years, from 97 through 2014, and obviously was Cathaoirleach, and he had been battling illness for some time with great dignity and courage, and we're all very sad that he passed on this week, and I wanted to pass on our own condolences to his wife Noreen, daughters Helen and Sinead and Jarlett, and indeed their seven grandchildren, and all the extended family and friends. Patsy touched very, very many lives, often unacknowledged, helped a great many people, and was the champion of North County Sligo. Didn't say much, but when he spoke, we listened. And it was always something of substantial wisdom. He was a great mentor to me, and indeed many other in politics, and he'd be greatly missed by everybody in our party, everybody in North Sligo, and indeed beyond.
Yeah, and I think it's a measure of his popularity that tributes have been coming Patsy's way from all political backgrounds, and none indeed. A sad loss to all, indeed, particularly to, as you said, to North Sligo and the Grange area. Right, okay, if you've got any opinions you seek of the panel, let us know now. 071 911 8104, our number. You can text or WhatsApp to 083 3500 530. And this person WhatsApped earlier saying, I would like to ask your Friday panel this morning, as they are two TDs, their opinion on the taxpayer paying €25,000 a day for the Dáil to meet in the conference centre in Dublin. When is this going to end? Because when you view it on the television, the amount of politicians present could easily fit in the Dáil chamber. The conference centre in Dublin is an insult to the taxpayer, and at this rate, we'll be wondering what hit for the taxpayer is to come when the pandemic is over. At least one of you, I don't know if both of you have spoken out on this. I know you have, Deputy McSharry. Is it 25,000 a day? I don't know what the exact amount is, but
I opposed us moving there at all, at any cost, because I felt with the appropriate management and will, the campus of Leinster House could have been used. And wrote to Ken Corley and everybody at the time to try and stop it, and indeed have been inquiring about us returning ever since to the Leinster House campus. So the 25,000 a day, I gather, is not rent. It's to do with the telecommunications costs and all of that kind of stuff. So I'm only there if there's a vote or if I have a speaking slot. Otherwise, you're in your office in Leinster House and you're doing your work from there. Committees are all on Zoom, although you're supposed to be on Zoom from the confines of the Convention Centre or Leinster House for it to be legal, such is the madness of some of our legislation and rules. So I agree with your listener 100%. Tried to stop them going there in the first place, and I'm very eager to get them back because it is a total waste of money.
Okay, and no sign of it to return to normal, do you know, or what is the update? Do you have any idea?
Not that I've heard of. Maybe Thomas has, but I don't think so.
Okay.
Go ahead. Sadly, there is no sign of a return to normal, and it's something that I'm on the business committee in the Dáil representing our independent group, and it comes up at every meeting about what's happening here, and it makes very difficult sense, and visually it's very difficult as well. Like, convention centre the size that it is with 10 or 11 TDs in it, it doesn't seem to make sense at all. The problem is that the staff and the stuff they got there of Leinster House, and the reason that we've been told is that we can't be in Leinster House is because if there's votes to be taking place, that it's not possible to do that socially distanced and meeting the criteria in relation to COVID and all that kind of stuff there. But at some point, they're going to have to bite the bullet and go back to Leinster House, and I think that's to be done sooner rather than later. And I would be afraid that, I mean, the tendency is now is that they're saying that, you know, the vaccination program is happening, so that's going to take us back. But we don't know when everybody's going to be vaccinated, and what they're saying is that basically you can't go back until everybody's vaccinated. So that could be I would be afraid it could be after Christmas or something like that there before we get back to it. And I think what we should be doing is, and the Dáil should be doing, is aiming to be back for September, if that's the case, and make sure that everybody's vaccinated. And if that does require a number of people being vaccinated out of sequence, I think that would be important to actually make sure that it's up and running and back where it should be, and saving that cost as well to the taxpayer.
Okay, but your week is just the same, both of you, is it? You do what you have to do, your business at home with your clinics, and then to Dublin. The structure of your week hasn't changed, has it at all?
Not well. It has changed in that you know you're between Leinster House and the Convention Centre, and it is a torture going between the two. And like, I would be slightly different to Mark, is that I would spend the time in the Convention Centre, and then you have problems with Wi-Fi, and you don't have access to the same documents that you would have in your office in Leinster House and stuff like that there. And it is more awkward and more difficult. Like, there's absolutely no doubt about that. And, you know, because of the COVID crisis, this is what we have had to do. But I would be worried that maybe the solution isn't being grasped now as well, to get us back actually into the Dáil. And that should be addressed, I think.
Right, okay. All right, we learned this morning that the number of COVID patients in hospitals has fallen to 99. And that's the first time the number has been below 100 since last September. Is that a justification that what the government is doing and what NPHET have been advising and all the precautions we've been taking and all the restrictions in place are working? And I know both of you in your own way have been critical of the way we've handled the pandemic. Mark McSharry, what are your thoughts on that? Are we winning this battle, and have you been wrong for your criticism of your own party, indeed your party leader, and the way it's been handled?
It's. I mean, obviously, as we've got up to speed on the vaccine rollout and people are getting it fairly quickly now, there seems to be a dividend in that. Plus, obviously, the weather gets better. There's less indoor time being spent. All those things have had an impact. So, I mean, my criticism of the strategy has been around. I'm not a COVID denier or anything like that. I know the seriousness of it, but I think that we wasted three lockdowns when we could have been developing a strategy for, the opening of society with appropriate restrictions, and for us to get in line with those restrictions, I felt would have been possible. We'll never know, because we never tried it and we never developed that strategy. We went the route of total lockdowns, and I think the collateral damage of that will only come to light in the months ahead. Now, we're all delighted that there's less people in hospital. We're all delighted that there's no deaths every second day now, thank God. But the WHO advocate lockdowns so that people can build, so that nations can build capacities. And I don't believe we did. We did that. Look, the pandemic, thankfully, you know, there's light at the end of the tunnel now. So I suppose there's no point in looking back. But I would have liked to have tried things differently. Yeah, I definitely would.
Okay, and when you talk about collateral damage, what do you mean exactly? What's going to become evident in the months and years to come?
I think a lot of businesses won't reopen, sadly. And particularly in our region here in the Northwest, you know, the small business that just can't afford to have had sat, you know, for a year or the best part of a year plus before being able to reopen. And the whole mental health side of things, I think, has taken a toll on all of us. And you know, we haven't been focused on that. I mean, it's been wall-to-wall COVID from 7 in the morning until 12 o'clock at night now for over a year, and you know, people not being able to go out their daily lives due to lockdowns and so on. And I think that you know, that's the collateral damage. That's the silent crisis that isn't being talked about at all. And as I said, it's for that reason that I'd have liked to have tried different things to allow for the taking of the advice of the NPHETs and so on, but it's government and the Oireachtas' role to distill that down into a functioning society, and I think we could have done that much better.
Okay, Deputy Pringle, you've been on with us a couple of times about the zero COVID policy that you were calling for. How do you feel about the situation? Do you think we've made progress? And in hindsight, have the government handled this properly and NPHET handled it as best they could, do you think?
Look, I mean, as Mark says, we seem to be making progress now, and I hope that the vaccination program goes well and that we are coming towards the end of the crisis and getting out of it in that way. I would take a different attitude to Mark in relation to what we should have done. I think we should have locked down a lot harder and a lot longer at the start, and that would actually have allowed us to reopen society then in a way that would allow business to progress, and that should have been done. The most frustrating thing for me over this period is that basically the whole of last year is forgotten about, and the whole of last year is we've learned nothing from the crisis that we'd gone through in relation to that. And I think we should have taken a different route on it, and we should have pursued a zero COVID strategy, because even if we hadn't achieved what, as the government constantly says, we can't, we're not New Zealand and we're not Australia and we're not every other country that had a zero COVID, but if we hadn't have achieved that, we would have came close to it, and that would have been important. But look, hopefully we're coming through the end of it now, and the vaccination program will actually pick up and get people vaccinated and get people their second vaccination, because I think that's going to be very important. And there's still as a risk maybe that people who have only one vaccination aren't fully vaccinated. But hopefully yeah. That'll all be done, and by the end of this year, that we'll be out the far side of it, and then we can have another look and see, you know, and have an autopsy or whatever to see what worked and what didn't work. But I think we went the wrong way around it from that point of view.
Right, okay. Well, just before we move on, we have an urgent message this morning, because one of the breaking news stories this morning nationally has been that cyber attack on the HSE network, and the head of the HSE saying, Paul Reid saying this morning, that confirming that their IT system has been the subject of a sophisticated cyber attack. And a lot of people are ringing us in relation to that. Siobhan McAniff, who's the operations site manager at IT Sligo's vaccination centre, has been in touch with us to stress that the COVID vaccinations are still going ahead today. They are going ahead, and it's important that people turn up at IT Sligo at their appointed time. And she says the HSE cyber attack does not have any impact on the vaccination programme, so please attend today at the appointed time, which is an important message, and we'll repeat it on our news. I want to get, and Deputy Pring, I'll get to you in a moment, because you were on that, or you were part of that meeting between Tony Holohan and Stephen Donnelly and Ronan Glynn with the Donegal politicians on the bank holiday weekend. Mark Mashore, you were critical of Tony Holohan and his remarks about Donegal and the dogs in the street knowing what was going on there. Was it an unfortunate use of language, do you think?
No, it wasn't. I mean, I don't like areas being singled out. You know, I mean, the truth is the vast majority of people all over this country, and particularly in Donegal, followed the rules to a T, you know, and it was wrong for this flippant remark from an ivory tower on Bagot Street in Dublin to say the dogs in the street know, you know, what's going on in Donegal, and the implications being that people there are reckless, or people there hadn't sacrificed what the rest of the country had. And that really, really annoyed me. And so I did tweet that I was very annoyed about that at the time, and I felt that he should have been apologising to the people of Donegal. And I don't think that the blame game was helpful throughout this process. I mean, yes, we had antisocial behaviour and a number of outbreaks throughout the course of the last year and a bit, whether it was some people that were drinking in the wrong place or in large numbers, whether it was weddings and marquees going up and so on. But I felt it was uninformed and a silly remark by him. And yes, there were difficulties in Donegal at different times, particularly earlier in the crisis, because, you know, we have the border going all along, and that caused difficulties. The other thing that Mr. Holohan clearly is oblivious to is that Donegal is a very large county. It's a very rural county, and many people have to travel significant distances for the most basic of services, whether it's retail or whatever. So that's where I was coming from with that.
Deputy Pringle, I think you were on that Zoom call on the bank holiday weekend, and I think you were more than disappointed that what was suggested and maybe agreed to that meeting didn't all come to pass.
I felt that the meeting while it's focused attention on Donegal over that weekend and stuff like that there, and maybe that's what they wanted to achieve and that they would be discussing it. But in reality, there was a number of things were agreed at that meeting that didn't come to pass over it. It was agreed at that meeting that Tony Holohan or I can't remember his first name, but McGlynn would actually go on Highland Radio and local radio in Donegal.
I think that did happen, but it took some time, I think, wasn't it?
Well, it took some time and it didn't happen when it was supposed to have happened. And on Tuesday morning, then you had just the local politicians having to explain the situation again to people. And I don't think that was, if it was agreed at the meeting that this was to happen, it should have happened. And then we had the Minister for Health agreed that he would do mobile centres around the county and stuff like that there in different places like Milford and stuff like that there. And again, that was very late happening as well. Now, it did happen, which is good, but it was very late happening as well. You know, and you know, it's one thing to come out and say the statements that Tony Holland made and stuff like that there, but then not to back it up and follow it up with actually what you agreed to do at a meeting is wrong, I think, and it's not the way that Donegal people should have been treated. And I would agree with Mark and some of what he says there, that, you know, and what came out at the meeting on the Saturday as well was that the vast majority of people were following the guidelines and stuff like that there, but that was lost in the whole furore over the remarks. And I think that was important because the people were very upset that they were doing their best, and this is the kind of comment that was coming out in relation to it.
Okay, well, it's not the county with the highest COVID rates.
Not anymore, no.
No, so did his words and all the controversy, has it worked? Did it focus people's minds, you think?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, it may have worked, and I suppose we won't know for definite, but the COVID rates were coming down anyway. And what they actually said at the meeting on that Saturday was that, you know, that one event in an area could skew the whole figures away off as well. And I mean, you know, so where the impression was given that everybody was partying and going mad, and that's why the COVID numbers were off. Actually, when it came down to it at the meeting, like, you could have one event that would be catastrophic for the whole area in terms of numbers and that there. And it seems like that is what is happening. Those events have passed and people have stopped, and that's reducing the numbers, you know. And hopefully that'll continue on, but that needs to happen.
Right. Okay. And one listener reminds us about, and we had a discussion during the week about the Dáil printer, the infamous Dáil printer, which apparently hasn't printed one page since its installation at a cost of, what, €2 million. And we had John Drennan on the show during the week telling us it was all related to COVID. No training could be carried out. And he actually quoted you, Deputy McSherry, about what you had said during the committee meeting, saying that the children's hospital approach had been taken to public procurement. Have you used the printer, have you, or have you accessed it or tried to access it?
No, I mean, we all can order kind of headed paper and materials that are needed, you know, from the printer. So it's in a different building. So I haven't been, I haven't, other than some headed paper, I don't know whether it came from the new printer or the old printer or what the situation is.
But not value for money, you don't think, from what you know?
No, it was a disaster. I mean, what happened was they didn't measure it. You know, I mean, and that's the sort of incompetence that we see across, you know, public procurement at different times. And the sad reality is there's never a consequence, you know. And I suppose a big and more recent one, and it was subject of a primetime investigates, was, you know, the mismeasuring of the building where the Department of Health is in Dublin, which is going to cost the state €10 million. And I asked the Secretary General or the Commissioner, the Chief Commissioner of the OPW, who was responsible for that. Was there a disciplinary process afoot? He said, no, it's not a disciplinary matter. I asked Robert Watt, who gave himself an extra 81,000 there lately in salary, you know, what his view. He was then the Secretary General of the Department of Public Expenditure in relation to this matter. And he said, no, we don't pursue a gotcha culture, I think were his exact words, in the public services. We use it as a learning experience. So that's the culture. Whether your negligence loses $10 million or $2 million or whatever it is, it's a learning experience.
The private sector
doesn't operate like that, of course.
Okay, you know, so the lack of what he calls a gotcha culture means there's no accountability in otherwise.
Absolutely. In other words. That's my position, and that's what has to change.
Deputy Pringle, have you been in the printer room?
I don't know what they're learning. Is they learning to do it better the next time, so that they won't get caught or what? Like, but
absolutely,
you know, it's nonsensical. Like, and how somebody can make this. Okay, look. An individual can make a mistake and stuff like that, and that can happen. But they need to be accountable for that. And if we make mistakes, we'll be held accountable when the election comes around, and we'll be voted out if that's what people decide. You know, so I think that needs to be, people need to be accountable for the stuff that happens. And whether that is that somebody gets sacked or not, I don't know. But it needs to be accountability. It has to be there at the forefront of it anyway.
Right, okay. Listener wants to know, what are the panel's views on the public and private healthcare situation? And that relates to a gentleman we'd on earlier who was sent for an MRI scan by his GP last December. He's still waiting for it, and there's no indication of when he'll get the scan. Yet if he goes private, he'll have it in 2 weeks. Mark Masher, I'm sure you get this at your clinics on an ongoing basis.
All the time.
What do you say to people? And there were numerous people with all sorts of tales, such tales on the show this morning. What do you say to people like that?
Yeah, well, I suppose what can be done about it, first and foremost, in the system we have, which is a flawed system with an awful lot of legacy issues, where 40 years ago and 50 years ago and 60 years ago, hospitals and services would pop up wherever there was a senior minister or wherever there was proximity to a government and so on. And that didn't serve us very well. So now we have that system. We've all agreed, all parties, cross-party, Sláinte Care, which aims for, you know, a one-tier system instead of the two-tier system we have. But in the meantime, what should be done, in my opinion, is the National Treatment Purchase Fund should be allocated adequate resources so that people like the gentleman this morning can get their MRI or other treatments as quickly as possible. And that's not happening. And I worry about Sláinte Care and the implementation of it too, in terms of the costs that are going to be involved in achieving it and whether we will allocate enough resources over the period of years ahead to achieve a one-tier system. But I think in the absence of it, and the two-tier system we have, the only way to provide services quickly to people is to put enough money into the National Treatment Purchase Fund and allow it for all sorts of health procedures, scans, and so on. It's only used for procedures at the moment and only selected ones. And I'd like to see it broadened out, given more money, until such time as we have a one-tier system so that people can get the scans and care that they need.
Okay, Deputy Pringle on this, and I'm sure it crops up at your clinics on a regular basis as well, people in this predicament.
Yeah, it has, and you know, listen to Mark there, it's a pity if you all weren't in government that they could actually sort this out. And, and that's the reality of the situation. We have continuous Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, and we have the Green Party now, and we had the Labour Party a couple of years ago in government, and this has led to the situation that we have in relation to this. And the Treatment Purchase Fund is a magic solution as far as Fianna Fáil members are concerned to solve it, but that's basically giving money to the private sector again to actually deal with the issues. And the problem is that the public sector has been run down in order that the private sector can benefit from it. Like, you have a situation in Letterkenny now at the minute where you go to the doctor, GP sends you for a private appointment to get your scan done, and then it comes back to them. Like, I mean, that's just nonsensical. It's a lack of commitment to a public healthcare system. And we talk about the new system that every party supposedly signed up to, but the three parties that are in government have supposedly signed up to that as well. And what are they actually doing in relation to delivering Sláinte Care? The budget, I think there's a small budget of a couple of million for the Sláinte Care office, and that's it in terms of the budget that's happening there. So we need to see Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael and the Greens committing to Sláinte Care, actually committing to deliver it and to make sure that it works, because they're in government at the moment. And I would be afraid that we'll see the end of this government and that the private healthcare will be pushed even further to the fore, and with a further undermining of a public health system.
Okay, did you say at the outset there that it's a pity Fianna Fáil are not in government? Is that what you said?
Yeah, that's what I said.
Tongue in cheek.
Yeah, it's a bit of tongue in cheek, but you know, that's the reality of the situation. Is that this is we're living through a health system that has been developed and funded and maintained by Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, and the Greens now, and the Labour Party in the last government, or the government before the last, and that's the reality of the situation. That's where we are.
All right, okay. There's all sorts of questions and views being sought from Bord na Móna to the conflict in the Middle East to housing, affordable housing, and all sorts. Somebody makes the point that one, they, again, talk about being tongue-in-cheek, they make the point, be it relevant or not, that one of the things that both of you have in common, perhaps, is that you're neither of you are great admirers of Taoiseach Micheál Martin. Do you want to respond to that, Deputy McSherry?
Well, I wouldn't say it like that. I mean, it's an issues based approach for me. You know, if I have things to say on particular issues and criticisms, then I have always aired those and never been afraid to. And that applied to Bertie Ahern and Brian Cowan as much as it does the current leader. So, I mean, and it's never personal. I mean, it's business. And if I disagree with an aspect of things, and this is a situation where Thomas, as an independent, and I should probably say there was independence in the last government in cabinet too. So, you know, it's you can hurl on the ditch or you can be in a party. And if you're in a party, you're not going to get your way all the time. And I don't. So you lobby and you put forward the case and you criticise internally and externally at times when you disagree with an aspect of policy. And I've always done that. And I have been critical of the Taoiseach in his handling of certain issues, certain policy matters. And that's not going to change anytime soon. That's always the way I've been. And that's the way I'm going to remain.
Okay, so nothing personal. It's just what's best for Fianna Fáil and what's best for the leadership of the party?
It's what's best. I'm a member of Fianna Fáil. I work for the people. So yeah. I'll take a view on what I think needs to be done. Hopefully we can shape Fianna Fáil policy around that. But you don't get your way all the time. So you criticise and you'll say, well, look, I think we should do X because of Y and so on, you know. And Thomas does the same, but independents have the benefit of jumping from what they perceive to be the winning side of one argument to the next.
Have you got the come on and the helmet in tow there? Are you a hurler in the ditch, Deputy Pringle?
Well, from a Fianna Fáil point of view, probably am, because, you know, Fianna Fáil are doing everything to benefit the country. And, you know, at some point, you have to realise that a project isn't working. You see, this is the interesting thing about it. Maybe it is working. It's working for the people who are running the private companies and working for the people who are running the private healthcare systems. It's not working for the nurses or for the members of the public or for the people who depend on the healthcare system. But maybe that's not the people that Fianna Fáil want to represent. And maybe it is the privatisation agenda is what they want to pursue. And look, Mark is true. Yes, Mark is a member of Fianna Fáil and he objects to it in relation to what Fianna Fáil are doing and stuff like that there. But he has a very cosy position that he's not in government and he can object to it and seen to come on here to be seen to be opposing government policy. But every time he votes in the Dáil to support that government policy. And that's the reality of the matter. And, you know, and I'm quite happy that I will make my case and make my views known. And I would be quite happy to actually be in a position to actually resolve those cases as well. And that will ultimately be in government. But it won't be in government as being a prop to Fianna Fáil.
A prop to who? I was just coming to that. So if you are in government in some shape or form, or you're a junior minister or whatever, what combination would it have to be for Deputy Pringle to become Minister Pringle?
Well, it would have to be a combination of parties of the left, and I would have to say that would have to be a combination that wouldn't include Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael, and because I don't believe that Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael have done anything in terms of actually progressing the country and making the services available to the people that require them. I was involved in negotiations at the formation of the last Dáil before COVID hit, where we were talking to, I was talking to Sinn Féin, to the Sock Dems, to the People Before Profit, and then the COVID hit, and that changed everything. But I think we should have pursued that, and we should have went on with that as well, because I think that it would have been a great opportunity for the left to actually be in government to make the changes, and COVID would have made the changes probably more acceptable to everybody, so that they would see that things could happen and this country could be changed irrevocably after COVID, and I think that would be a huge benefit. The big danger now is that we're going to see that Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael will ensure that we go back to the way things were, and that's we're going to continue on as we come out of this crisis now, and we'll go back to a crisis again.
Okay, well, coming out of the crisis, we'll finish with that one. And as we know, Deputy McSharry, the country had restrictions eased last week. And again, this Monday, there'll be more restrictions eased, and business in particular is slowly getting back to normal. What are your views on the roadmap? Is it something you would agree to, subscribe to? The pace of return, is it as it should be? And are you confident that it will be a better year for all as we approach the second half of this year? Are you confident?
Yeah, I'm certainly very hopeful that it will be. I'd like to move things forward a little bit quicker than we are, to tell you the truth. I think the idea of shops being open for click and collect and by appointments and all of that kind of stuff, I just feel we could have designed a strategy that would have society functioning a lot quicker and a lot better than it is. And it's great that things are beginning to open. Of course, the second half of the year, we hope, is going to be much, much better than the last year and a half. But I'd be moving it a little quicker if I could, yeah.
Right, okay. Deputy Brinkle, what about yourself? Are you happy with the pace of the reopening of the country, or what are your thoughts on that, considering advocating a zero?
I'm afraid that we may be going too fast. And we might be opening up too quickly, but unfortunately, time will only tell in relation to that. There, I hope that the vaccination program delivers and keeps on going, and that we will by September, October time that people will be vaccinated and things will be getting back to normal. Hopefully, that's the way we should be doing. But I do believe that there was a year lost in relation to what we were doing here, and that sadly the whole of last year basically has been written off, and that's sad, but that comes down to the handling of the crisis, I believe, and those decisions are passed now. Hopefully we'll come out the right end now, and that the vaccination program will get on board, and that people can actually start to open up. I hope everything goes well and we don't have any spikes. Unfortunately, the time we know, and that's is too late, whether if the spikes arrive or if they don't arrive, hopefully they won't arrive, and that we can continue on and opening up as we are.
All right, can I ask you both a very final question in relation to Boris Johnson? What are your views on Boris Johnson, who is meeting our Taoiseach Micheál Martin in England today in relation to the situation in Northern Ireland and to discuss the COVID situation and the British and Irish relationship, which has been further wobbled this week, as we know. Do you know Boris Johnson, Mark McSherry? Have you ever met him? Do you know anything about him at all? Or what are your thoughts on him politically?
Never met him. Wouldn't like him. Not my cup of tea.
How do you know that?
A megalomaniac.
How do you know? You might like him.
No, well, I mean, I'm judging him as the leader of a country. I mean, I'm not talking about... I mean, maybe if I met him, he might be good crack on a personal level, but I mean, I don't think he's running his country very well, and I think he's untrustworthy, and I think he changes his mind or misleads, and we've seen that with the protocols, we've seen that with his negotiations with the EU. So I wouldn't be a fan, no.
Right, okay. I was listening to Simon Coveney yesterday saying that, you know, basically he felt that no matter what Boris Johnson says today or what assurances he gives, you can't accept him and you can't trust him. Would you agree, Deputy Pringle, with that or not? Or do you know Boris Johnson? Deputy Pringle, who seems to have stalled on us. All right, he has, yeah, okay. Lots of opinions on Micheál Martin, and people saying that Micheál Martin should have made Mark McSherry a member of government. I'm sure you don't want to go there, Deputy, do you?
Not at all. I mean, I've dealt with it many times. I mean, I'd never have been on his list, you know.
Okay. Well, that may change, may it not, or do you know?
on his list. No, yeah. I'd say hell would freeze over.